You're listening to the Ayn Rand Institute Live podcast. Be sure to check out our other podcasts, Philosophy for Living on Earth and New Ideal from the Ayn Rand Institute. A spoiler-free introduction to The Fountainhead with Ben Baer and Keith Lockich.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Fountainhead discussion group sponsored by the Ayn Rand Institute. Welcome. We're really glad to be able to get in touch with you about this. My name is Ben Baer. I'm a fellow and instructor at the Ayn Rand Institute. Joining me is my colleague, Keith Lockich. Hi, Keith.
Hi, everybody. Do you want to advance the slide, Ben? Do we have a title slide?
Good idea, yes. Thanks. So I wanted to start out by just saying a few things about why we are doing this webinar. And I see that there are a good number of people here. I haven't yet had a chance to see who you are or where you're coming from. We're going to ask some poll questions in a moment later to find out more about you. But as I see it, three basic reasons why we're doing this webinar. One is that we know a lot of you are at home right now, and we're looking for ways to connect with you and to give you things that are productive to think about and to read and to discuss with other people of like minds while you're stuck there. And I'll just say to those of you who are in our who are watching on our social media channels, if you'd like to be able to participate in live discussion, the thing to do going forward is to go to the second URL that I've just listed on the page here and register so that you can participate in our Zoom discussion. It's through Zoom that we'll be taking questions. You'll be able to chat with the presenters and the panelists. And so we encourage you to go to that courses.aynrand.org page to register so that you can participate through Zoom. We're broadcasting on other social media channels also, but we're not monitoring any of the chat or the comments or the questions that are coming in there. So the second big reason why we're doing these webinars on the Fountainhead relates to the first URL that I have out of order on this page, which is that the Ayn Rand Institute is the sponsor of the world's largest essay contest in terms of number of participants, number of entrants that we get every year. And this includes essay contests on Ayn Rand's books, Anthem, The Fountainhead, and Atlas Shrugged. Now, this is the discussion group about The Fountainhead. The deadline for submissions, we've actually extended the deadline for submissions for this essay contest until May 28th, which is right after this discussion group is going to finish. And the prize, the first prize is $10,000. So if you're in high school and you're looking to get money for college, this is an ideal opportunity this is an ideal opportunity for you to make productive use of your time while you are maybe stuck at home. Read a book. It's an interesting book. We're going to talk more about why in a minute. And you even get the chance to write an essay, enter a contest, maybe even win some money. And I can guarantee you that there are going to be things that you will learn from this discussion group that will help you on this essay contest. We're not going to like help you write your answers or anything, but we're going to put the events of the book in perspective where it'll be easier for you to understand maybe what's going on in a particular passage that you do have to analyze for the contest once you know that perspective better. So that's May 28th is the deadline, and the URL is on the page there. But the third big reason for why we're doing this webinar is that this is a great topic to discuss really at any time, because The Fountainhead by Ayn Rand is a great book. Sometimes people talk about, oh, one day I'm going to sit down and write the great American novel, or who will write the great American novel, they'll wonder. And I certainly encourage any of you, if you want to try doing it while you're taking your time off, to do that. But I mean, in my book, at least, the great American novel has already been written. Maybe you can write an even better one. But I think the great American novel is The Fountainhead. And that's because if there's a single idea that's associated with America, it's the idea of individualism. And The Fountainhead is the book, more than any other, which celebrates the idea of individualism, celebrates the idea that you yourself are the one who's in charge of your life, that you have to make decisions, that you can't depend on other people to do your thinking for you. But it illustrates this idea in a dramatic setting with heroic characters who are opposed by antagonists and who have to overcome obstacles in order to think and to live for themselves. It's set in America in the 1920s and 30s. The hero is an architect who's doing battle with conventional thinking about how the world should look in terms of its buildings in America. And it's a book that's influenced a lot of people, from celebrities to Supreme Court justices. And it's influenced some of us so much that we decided to go into the business of thinking about and teaching Ayn Rand. I myself have been interested in Ayn Rand's books and ideas for about 25 years. And the book that more than anything else got me interested in it was The Fountainhead. I actually read The Fountainhead because of the essay contest that the Institute sponsors, thinking, hey, I'll just get some money for college. I don't even know if I'll like this book. In fact, I thought I wouldn't like it. I thought I would disagree with it. But halfway through the book, I hadn't even had a chance to write the essay or enter the contest. The deadline passed. And it didn't matter because I was already pulled into the book in spite of myself. And in a lot of different ways, it changed my life. It changed the way I thought about my own self, my own life, in relation to other people. We can talk maybe a little bit more about that later. But I don't know, Keith, did you want to jump in here and say anything?
Yeah, so I agree with your comments about all the reasons for doing this. We know that we wanted to make an online session available to people who might be looking for content, but also that the real reason we want to do this is we'll look for any excuse possible to get on a session where we can talk about The Fountainhead and talk about Ayn Rand's ideas, because that's what we're passionate about and that's what we do at the Ayn Rand Institute. Yeah, and The Fountainhead, I mean, you mentioned that we have this essay contest. This was one of the Ayn Rand Institute's first programs when it was founded in 1985. And I also did The Fountainhead. I read the book before I heard about the essay contest, but I ended up participating in the essay contest in the second year of its existence. I handed my essay in 1987. I'm kind of dating myself here. I did not win. I got a very nice letter from the executive director telling me that I was like a semi-finalist or something. But yeah, reading The Fountainhead and digging deeply into the ideas in the novel had a you know, life-changing experience for me as well.
And you win a little bit of money even if you're just a semi-finalist, right,
Keith? Not so in 1987.
But now
today,
you do.
Today you do, yes. Today
now there's all kinds of money for ranking entrance. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so actually, we're especially interested to see if first-time readers can join us for this discussion group, people who maybe even haven't read the book yet, or maybe you've read it, but you haven't entered the essay contest yet. We'd like to find out more about who you are and where you're coming from. And so I'm going to just do a quick look. If you're in Zoom, you will be able to do this poll. And it's just asking for your familiarity with Ayn Rand to see if you know her really well, you don't know her at all. And there's about 56 people here who are attending in Zoom, which is great. And we'd definitely like to find out a little bit more about who you are. This gives us metadata. And I'll leave that running for a while.
Actually, Ben, while people are doing that, I wanted to ask another question, which is we're doing similar sessions on Ayn Rand's novella Anthem. We just did it about 2 hours ago. It started. It just ended an hour ago. And looking at the participants here, I'm seeing that there are people, some of the people attending this session were attending the other one. If you go into the participants tab, if you can do that, I'm just curious, there's a way to raise your hand. So if anybody, I'm just curious, if you were somebody who was participating in the Anthem session, please press the hand raising feature. And we'll just kind of look, we can see down the list here by show of hands, who are the people that did that, just out of curiosity. I think it's wonderful if you can come to both. If you have a preference for one novel or the other, you can certainly choose to do that. But we're just out of curiosity. It looks like there's about... There's about a dozen people who looks like they're attending both. So that's great. We're really glad to have you all. And I'm going to lower all hands now.
Okay, so just then a few more logistical things for going forward. Today's session is an introductory session. We're just kind of getting things started. We're waiting for more people to get the emails that we sent about this, and we expect that next week's session will be the really big first session. But there's a reading schedule. The Fountainhead is a long book. It's 700 something pages, depending upon the edition that you get. And we have about 7 weeks to kill here before the deadline of the essay contest arrives. So we have to do, if we're going to finish this in time for you all, about 100 pages a week. And if you go to that same page where it says register on the screen, you'll see there's a reading schedule. And roughly we're split, the book is divided into four parts. Three of them we're dividing into. And that leaves one more. So there's seven chunks of about 100 pages each. So for next week, if you want to dig deep into some of the ideas and characters and events of the story, you should try to get that reading done. And I think we're also going to try to send out a brief set of discussion questions that you can think about in advance and maybe even email us about. We haven't figured out quite yet all of the logistics about how we're going to do that, but at the very least, we'll post them for next week. We'll post them to this registration page where you also see the list of readings. And so those will be some questions to think about. Ask yourself, how would you answer them? And we can talk about those questions in the session next time. So actually, Keith, I'm going to stop the screen share at this point so that you can see both of us better. And there we are. And I think I'm going to
stop. And are we in gallery view, Ben?
I think so. Yes, I am.
Okay.
If any of our friends want to confirm that in Slack, you can do that. But yeah,
Ben, before we jump into anything else, let's just say people are starting to put some questions in. Why don't we explain how they can do that by going into the Q&A module? Do you want to do that?
Right. So Nick was asking, he can see the two links, but nothing else. We've just turned off that screen. So now you should only see the two of us. But if you are in Zoom and you want to ask a question or make a comment, there's two ways to do this. One is just to use the chat feature. So if you hover over your screen, there should be a button, big button at the bottom that says chat. It'll pop up then on the right side of your screen. And that chat right now is set up so that we can see what you write, but nobody else can see what you write. So the other attendees won't see it. So it's anonymous in that way. And it's a little easier for us to see when someone chats. But if you have a specific question that you want to ask, you can also use the Q&A module. It's another big button. If you hover over the screen at the bottom, questions will go in there. So you might want to reserve maybe comments for the chat and questions for the question module. But you can really use either. We'll try to monitor both. And yeah, just so feel free that, to...
Sorry. So I see that Lynn has her hand raised. If you have a question or a comment, maybe you could use either the chat or the Q&A module.
Yeah, we're not right now. At least we're not letting attendees talk on camera. Maybe someday we'll figure out the best way to do that. But for the time being, it's best to just use the chat or the Q&A.
Well, we've heard about people having bad. Everyone's learning about Zoom these days, and we've heard that organizations have had experiences with Zoom trolls. Not that we suspect anybody in our group here of being one, but we want to make sure that we have a professional experience here for everybody who's attending. Yeah. So
Keith, I think we got most of the logistical stuff out of the way.
Yeah.
I think we wanted to now spend just a little bit of time, at least without giving away any spoilers, talking about what this book is about, what the themes of the book are, and that you had some things you wanted to start out with.
Yeah, so one of the major, so Ayn Rand was both a novelist and a philosopher, and her primary goal in writing was to be a storyteller and to write works of art that people could contemplate, you know, as works of art, as ends in themselves. It's not primarily didactic, but she was a philosopher as well, and there's a lot of philosophical content that she puts into into her novels. And in The Fountainhead in particular, one of the things that she's doing in The Fountainhead is she's contrasting different characters who embody different life philosophies. So Ayn Rand, as a philosopher, you know, her view of philosophy is that it is a that everybody, whether we know it or not, has certain philosophical ideas that guide our thinking and our actions, whether we've thought about them explicitly or we haven't. Nevertheless, growing up, we absorb the ideas in the culture around us and we think about them, and our lives are guided and shaped by philosophy. And this is something that if you want her view on this explicitly, she has a talk and an essay called Philosophy Who Needs It, where she elaborates on her view of philosophy and its role in human life. That's something you can look for on ARI's website. But in The Fountainhead, part of what she's doing is you can think of the book in some ways as almost a philosophical thought experiment. She's saying, what if you were to take a number of different characters and you portray them as being guided and shaped by different philosophies of life, what does that look like over the course of a human life? You know, if philosophy is a fundamental force that shapes our thinking, it shapes our choices, it shapes our actions, it shapes the course of our life, what does that actually look like over the lifespan of a human being? So what she's doing in the novel is she's setting up her hero, Howard Rourke, who, as Ben said, this is in the way that this is the great American novel, represents the spirit of individualism. Rourke is somebody who embodies the philosophy of individualism. And in contrast to that, she's setting Rourke up against other characters who represent the opposite, in different ways, represent an opposite philosophy to individualism. So it's very interesting to see, given the ideas that these different characters embody, and again, not necessarily explicitly, they don't necessarily walk around spouting them, but you can see how their characters are shaped by different philosophical principles, and then what that does to them in terms of their choices and actions over the course of the story, and what is the ultimate result at the end of their life. So she's showing different types of life that one can have depending on the different kinds of philosophies that one embodies.
Yeah, and Keith, did you mention the part about the original title of the book?
Well, I was thinking about whether we want to do that. I guess we can do that. I was just thinking about whether this would be too much of a plot spoiler.
Maybe so. We can hold back on it. Yeah.
Yeah, we can circle back to that in future sessions.
But I wanted to add a little bit more because you mentioned how not necessarily in the speeches that they give, but at the very least in the actions and the events of the novel, it's showing the difference between individualism and non-individualism, what she sometimes calls collectivism, in her statement of the theme. And one of the good things about Ayn Rand is that she had very conscious intentions and wrote about them. And you don't always have to speculate about what she meant by the book, because she explained so much about what she meant. And when she described the theme of The Fountainhead, it was individualism versus collectivism, not in politics, but in man's soul. And that's a statement of theme that raises a lot of interesting questions. And first of all, what does individualism versus collectivism mean in politics? We could have a whole discussion of that. But The Fountainhead is not a political novel. There are ideas in it that you could perhaps apply to politics, and I think many people do, and that's a separate discussion. But when she means individualism in man's soul, she's talking about certain kinds of questions that come up for people in everyday life simply when they are dealing with other people, regardless of whether they happen to work for the government or work in a business or work in an architecture firm. And it's this issue of what does it mean to truly think for yourself about your career, about your relationships, about what makes you happy, and are you going to define that by your own standards or by what other people tell you? In the case of the Fountainhead, this is illustrated most directly with regard to the way the character, the hero of the novel, Rourke, thinks about how to build his buildings. There are conventional aesthetic standards that he's rebelling against, but he's not rebelling against them just because he likes to rebel. It's because he believes in these standards, and he thinks he has good reason to believe in his own standards, that is, in his own way of building things. And that's not the only place it comes up, but that's just the most obvious place. And it's interesting also to think about, why does she say individualism versus collectivism in man's soul? Soul is a word that you usually think of in connection with religion. But Ayn Rand is not using it in a religious sense. And in fact, if you take a look at the introduction that appears in most editions of the novel, most of the mass market editions, it's the introduction to the 25th anniversary edition of the book, she actually comments on this wider issue. She says, there's a wider issue which is involved in every line of the Fountainhead, which has to be understood if one wants to understand the causes of its lasting appeal. And she talks about how there are a lot of terms in morality that have been unjustly, in her view, appropriated by religion and monopolized, as if only religion has something to say about them. You know, so think about the concept of the soul. Well, the soul is the thing in each of us that's sacred. And what's sacred? Well, sacred is something that's superior and not to be touched. Well, in the way that a lot of people think about these things, what it means to be a sacred thing, not to be touched, is to be otherworldly and to not be sullied by the concerns of this world. But one of the points that she makes in this introduction is that it doesn't have to be that way, that these are concepts, whether it's soul or sacred or worship or reverence, these are concepts she thinks have real meaning. They have real emotional components in everybody's life that refer to life in this world and have a real important role to play, even if you're not thinking in terms of a religious view. And in fact, she says that this book, The Fountainhead, is an embodiment and a celebration of these kinds of concepts in a number of different ways. She says that it's a book that celebrates what she calls man worship. And if you want to see more about what she means by that, take a look at the introduction, but I will just read you one little passage from it. She says, "The man worshippers, in my sense of the term, are those who see man's highest potential and strive to actualize it. The man haters are those who regard man as a helpless, depraved, contemptible creature." It's important here to remember that the only direct introspective knowledge of man anyone possesses is of himself. And so the character Rourke is somebody, I mentioned before, one of the reasons that I liked this book, one of the reasons it meant something to me, was because Rourke is this ideal character that you can look up to. And he's contrasted with some of these other characters who aren't so admirable. And what's interesting, especially, is that the kind of worship she's talking about here is not otherworldly. It's related to life in this world. There's an architect who's so admirable, who's doing these heroic things. This is not somebody who's casting magic spells or doing supernatural deeds. He's a real live regular person. And so, I mean, in her view, there's a kind of idealism that you can have about these kinds of people and about the way they live their life that is not a separate issue from being practical. And it was that combination of views that really struck me as like how that you could have both is, I think, one of the really interesting distinctive things about the book. And she says in the introduction that it's one of the reasons that young people are especially enamored of the book. is they're just starting out life. And many, this might be true of many of you out there. And you've got things that you want to achieve someday. And people tell you, oh, given that's too difficult, be realistic. But what one of the things that she's saying in this book is that you can conceive of and enact realistic ideals. And to see that that's possible and conceivable, look at the kind of example of the person she portrays in the person of Howard Roark, which is, by the way, I mean, she's not just a made-up example. It's one that's based on real people she knew. And since she mentions the part about introspection, presumably part of it is coming from her own knowledge of herself.
And if I could just expand on what you're saying a little bit as well. So part of what she's talking about with these concepts that she's saying have been appropriated by religion, concepts of reverence and worship and the sacred, part of what she's arguing there is that this refers to the whole realm of people's dedication to values. And I think that's part of the appeal that you're talking about, why the Fountainhead is so appealing to young people. The idea of taking values seriously and taking ideals seriously and trying to live up to those ideals and fight for ideals is something, yeah, I think young people, especially starting out in life and thinking about what they want their life to be about, are very idealistic. And part of what she's arguing is that those emotions and that realm of dedication to values is such a crucial part of life that its focus should be and properly, you know, is and properly should be on life on earth, you know, and life and thinking about your own life as an individual and what goals you want to achieve. The idea that it's taken over by religion and only refers to otherworldly sentiments and so on, she thinks is one of the things that's bad about contemporary ideas. You look puzzled. You lost audio.
Okay, I'm back. I can hear you now.
Okay.
I missed the last thing you said, Keith. What was it?
Well,
you don't have to repeat the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to repeat it. I just wanted to say also in terms of today's session. So we haven't yet started reading the book. So the idea is that people will start reading the book this week and we'll rejoin again after having read the first few chapters. So the purpose of today's session is really just to orient people to what we're going to be doing in the session, give some general background to the ideas and to who Ayn Rand was and why she wrote the novel and so on. And then we're going to move to questions in a few minutes, just to kind of kick these sessions off.
Keith, did you want to say anything about her bio or is that what I missed?
Yeah, no. Okay. So part of what I want to do is to orient people to who she was and what she was doing in the novel and why she wrote it. Ben mentioned at the start of this that there's a way in which The Fountainhead is sort of the quintessentially American novel. It represents the spirit of individualism. And so there's a small bit of irony in the fact that the quintessentially American novel was written by, you know, a Russian-born immigrant to America. You know, Ayn Rand was born in 1905 in Tsarist Russia, and she actually witnessed, her family lived in St. Petersburg, quite close to the central square in the town, and she literally heard the first shots of the Russian Revolution in 1917 from her apartment window. So she saw her country taken over by socialism, by communism, by collectivism. And she, you know, she grew up under Soviet communism and wanted to escape from there as quickly as she could. She left the Soviet Union in 1921 by herself. Now she'd heard about America, she learned about America in school and saw, you know, America as the country of freedom, of individual rights. It was where she wanted to be from as soon as she knew about it. And she came to America expecting to find the country of individualism, expecting to find people who, a country where the where the people embraced the ideals that represented the way she thought about the world, as opposed to what she experienced in Soviet Russia. And when, but when she got to America, you know, she was sort of disappointed to discover that the leading intellectuals in America were embracing the same communist, collectivist, socialist ideals that she had just escaped from. And it sort of fell to her to articulate the principles of individualism and to write the great American novel that embodies those principles. And so, you know, she came to America at age 21. She had to learn English, and she had to had a real struggle working. You know, she came with nothing and worked odd jobs, just trying to survive, so that she could have the opportunity to become a writer, which is what she wanted to do from age, you know, 9 or 10 or something like that. And eventually she got to the point where she was able to finally write the novel that portrayed the kind of hero that represented her ideals and tells and presents the kind of radical philosophical perspective that she had come to understand, and you know, tell the story that she wanted to tell in The Fountainhead.
Well, Keith, you said that it was ironic that the quintessentially American novel was written by a Russian immigrant, but isn't the story that you just told of an immigrant coming from abroad and pulling herself up by her bootstraps precisely and quintessentially the American story?
That's a good point. That's true.
Yeah. I also just wanted to say one last thing about the relationship between this novel and Ayn Rand's philosophy and her career as a philosopher. So we will be discussing both literary and philosophic aspects of the story going forward. I think we'll first focus on the literary aspects, trying to understand who these characters are and why they're doing what they're doing. But the background of that is always, for Ayn Rand, philosophical. And it's connected to the issue that I raised earlier, because part of what she sees herself doing in as a literary artist is projecting a moral ideal, projecting an ideal character. And the way that she explained herself in a variety of other essays and lectures that she gave was that she thought she had to become a philosopher in order to understand what moral ideals were, so that she could portray characters who embodied them in her fiction. So it's this is something that I think most artists don't do. She thought that every artist had at least implicit philosophic views that informed the characters they formulated, the events that they plotted. But certainly not every artist, certainly not every novelist, does this at an explicit philosophic level, but she did, and she thought it was necessary to really tell the kinds of unique stories that she wanted to tell. And so she was, I think she probably would have considered herself primarily the creator in philosophy of a new code of morality, and everything else in her philosophic system is connected to that as a central issue. And that is something we're definitely going to explore. She called her philosophy objectivism. It's not just that moral viewpoint, but the whole view of reality and our place in it that connects to this moral ideal that she wants to propose and to illustrate. So that is something we'll spend some time talking about as well in the class. And I know that there are probably a mix of people who are watching. Some of you are coming to this for the first time and haven't explored any philosophy yet. I know that there are going to be some of you who are, you know, reading this for the fifth time, the 10th time, I don't know. And you know Ayn Rand's philosophy pretty well already. And I just want to make it clear that we're going to be prioritizing the novices, the people who are reading this for the first time. And we're not going to be trying to answer kind of technical questions about her philosophic worldview, only technical enough to get to the points that we need to get to. So let me actually share my screen one more time with a few things to share. And Keith, wait, there we go. You can see that screen share, Keith? Good. So if you have...
I'm seeing your toolbar, though. Do you want to just share the...
I'm not sure why it's doing that.
Full screen? There we go.
Okay, I must have just been hovered. But anyway, I know you're going to have... Many people here are going to have a lot of questions about the book, both about the events and the characters and about the ideas. So if you have questions, especially about the reading that we've just discussed, so for next week, it's the first 100 pages. If while you're reading this 100 pages, you have questions you want us to think about and answer in our sessions, please email these to us at students@aynrand.org, and we will see if we can incorporate commentary on those questions into our discussions. So that's really for everybody. Even if you got technical questions, we may not answer them, but we at least want to hear them and see if it's something that's worth bringing up.
And we got a question from Clara asking if this is going to be a discussion group, so it's just the host answering questions, or will attendees be able to discuss ideas with each other? So for the reasons we gave earlier about the nature of Zoom and not, we also because of bandwidth issues, I think we don't want to have everybody's camera and everybody's microphone turned on. So if you want to have discussions with other people who are participating, you can go to the Ayn Rand Institute has a Facebook page dedicated to the Fountainhead. So if you go to Facebook, if you go to Facebook and search for the Fountainhead, you can go to the Fountainhead page and you can feel free to post comments there and discussions, and people can participate and chat with each other. That's the best forum for that sort of thing.
Yeah, and we're also broadcasting this same discussion to that page as a Facebook Live recording. And Bettina is asking where she can find recordings, and that's one place. So you'll once the broadcast is done on Facebook, you'll be able to view it perpetually as a recording. We'll be posting it in other places as well. It's also going to be on YouTube. I think it's also on Periscope, and we may have eventually. I'm sure we'll put it on our proprietary site, which is Ayn Rand University. And people should, if you have an iPhone or an Android phone, download the Ayn Rand University app. That will be one place these recordings will eventually be available as well. That's a free app, which is not just featuring this material, but a whole lot of other multimedia lectures and recordings about Ayn Rand's ideas and novels.
And let me just put in a plug for, so we mentioned that part of the purpose of this is for, it's aimed at students who are participating in the essay contest. I, on the Ayn Rand University app, I actually have a course on the Fountainhead that I gave for the same reason. So if you're, it assumes that people have read the whole book. So if you might not want to do it if you haven't finished the whole novel, but there's a lot of additional information about the characters and themes and that sort of thing in that course, which you might find interesting. And as far as a recording of today's session is concerned, we thought of this idea of hosting these sessions, just a week ago. And we started marketing it just a couple days ago. So we're really gratified to see we got more than 60 participants here live right now, which is fantastic. But part of what we're going to do is we're going to make the recording of this session available as kind of the intro session. And if you students, or if you're teachers on the call or homeschoolers, if you want to share this with other people that you think might benefit from these sessions, please do that so we can get this out as widely as possible. And next week, maybe we could have 168 people participating in the call. That would be fantastic.
So I think now is a good time to transition to taking your questions. And I'll just keep the slide up for 10 more seconds. To let you know about that. But yeah, if you are on Zoom, one last time, the best way to ask a question is either to use the Q&A module. So hover over the screen, you'll find a button on the bottom says Q&A. There's a place there where you can submit a question. We'll see that. We can consider whether we'll answer it. You can also type questions in the chat, though the chat is a better place perhaps for comments, because we'll be looking for the questions in the first place. So let me stop the share one more time. And I think I've done that. So we have some questions coming from, there's a question from Terrence. And this is a interesting position you're in, Terrence. I've read a lot of her nonfiction, but little of her fiction. Is that going to affect my reading? Usually it's the other way around. Usually it's people read the fiction first and only get to the nonfiction later. I would say that it will affect your reading. And if that's true of anybody else, it's important when you're reading the fiction in light of knowledge of what her ideas are. I think it's important to try to understand the characters and the events on their own terms first, without trying to shoehorn her ideas into those events. Now, I think they are definitely related, but somebody who's, especially if you're only grappling with her ideas in nonfiction form for the first time, it's not always clear what those ideas mean. And what the novel and what the fiction makes clear is what they mean. It, the best embodiment of her philosophy is her novels. She wrote her nonfiction later in order to elaborate and make really explicit what the meaning of those novels is. But the first and the clearest way to understand the meaning of her ideas is through the fiction. And so I would try to, you know, for the moment at least, you know, put aside the nonfiction essays, just really try to grapple with what's going on in the story. And then after you've done that, I think it's a fine idea to try to relate it back to the nonfiction. And did you have any thoughts on that, Keith?
No, I agree with everything you said. We have another question about Nietzsche. Did you want to?
Yeah, Steve, and I suspect I know who Steve is and that he's more of an advanced a person here who's read a lot of the nonfiction, but he asks, what was the influence on Rand by Friedrich Nietzsche? How similar or different is Rand's concept of an ideal man with Nietzsche's overman, Superman, or other concepts like the Stoic ideal sage? So for those of you who aren't aware, Friedrich Nietzsche was a German 19th century philosopher who definitely had certain ideas that where there's at least a superficial resemblance between him and his ideas and Ayn Rand's ideas. And it's an interesting question of what influence there might have been, and it's not easy to know. Here are some things we do know. We know that Ayn Rand read Nietzsche. And she talks about it in a variety of places, including in the introduction to The Fountainhead, where she mentions how she was originally going to include a passage from Nietzsche's book Beyond Good and Evil as a kind of frontispiece, but that she eventually took it out. And so we know she read it. We also know from her biography that she had her most basic philosophic ideas before she read Nietzsche. There's a story she tells about how her sister in Russia was the one who introduced her to Nietzsche in the first place. And she read one of Nietzsche's book and she brings it to Ayn Rand. And she says, look, Nietzsche beat you to all your ideas. Whether or not they're the same ideas is an interesting question, but it's clear that Ayn Rand had conceived of some of these basic ideas on her own before she read Nietzsche. And then she did read him. And the way that she describes him in that introductory segment of the Fountainhead is that there are aspects of his writings which, especially from a poetic aspect, are consonant with the kind of heroic view of life and man-worshipping that she herself is trying to inject into this novel and express with this novel. But it's mostly from that kind of poetic aspect. She doesn't think at the end of the day that the deepest substance of Nietzsche's philosophy is anything like hers at all. And I've read a lot of Nietzsche and I can testify to this fact that they end up having very different view about the possibility of success and happiness. Nietzsche is much more pessimistic. Rand is not. Nietzsche doesn't believe that we really can make our own choices. He doesn't believe in free will. For Rand, free will is the crucial element of individualism. We talked about how individualism is the theme of this novel. And for that, it means that free will is also very important. That's something that Nietzsche denied. It would be too much, I think, to go into what Nietzsche meant by the overman, but I think that overview of the differences and similarities is sufficient. As to the Stoic ideal sage, I will just say, without saying too much more, that there is a character in this story who, in certain important ways, does, for a while at least, express very Stoic ideas and act according to Stoic ideas, but she changes her mind. And that, I think, is very important in showing that there's a difference between Ayn Rand's views and Stoicism. Stoicism is the idea that you should kind of grin and bear it no matter what life throws at you. As long as you don't want too much, then when you don't get it, you won't be disappointed. It's a view that's worked its way into the popular culture and vernacular, though it has ancient roots. And yeah, there are, again, just like with Nietzsche, there are some superficial similarities, but at the end of the day, there's again going to be very substantial differences. And I think when you see what that character thinks and how she changes over the course of the story, you'll see what some of the biggest and deepest differences are.
But I think also it's worth, in terms of Rand and Nietzsche, it's worth commenting on the fact, because this is one of the core themes of The Fountainhead is the idea of egoism. And so she's often put together with Nietzsche. They're both advocates of egoism. But part of what unfolds over the course of the novel and that we see by the end of the novels is that her concept of egoism or selfishness is radically different and radically opposite to that of Nietzsche. And there's a way in which, you know, what he's advocating is in contrast to the idea, the Christian altruistic idea of sacrificing yourself for others, there's a way in which Nietzsche advocates the sacrifice of others to the self. You know, the overman, you know, tramples on people just because he's better than everybody else. And that is, and what Ayn Rand is doing is rejecting that conception of selfishness. And so that's, even though there was an influence of Nietzsche, fundamentally in terms of the moral philosophy that she developed, it's fundamentally opposed to that.
Yeah, and just like I was saying about Stoicism, there is another character in The Fountainhead who really does live on this kind of Nietzschean overman, übermensch view, and wants to advance what he thinks are his interests by using power over other people. But just like the previous character I was talking about, you'll see that there's a big difference between the path that he takes and the path that the hero takes. The first character I was mentioning, she ends up following Rourke. After all, the character I'm now talking about, Wynand, there's a divergence, and that will be something we'll spend some time talking about.
So if people have questions, feel free to put them in the Q&A module. If there aren't more questions today about, you know, Ayn Rand, who she was, some of the ideas. Obviously, we haven't gotten into the novel yet, so we're not going to talk about events of the novel or things that would be plot spoilers. But if you have other questions, go ahead and put them in the Q&A module. And if you don't, we can draw a line for today, and we'll pick it up again next week.
Daria is asking, how old were you when you explored The Fountainhead? What impact did it have on you? Keith?
I think I was 15 or 16 when I read it, and it changed the whole course of my life. I mean, I work at the Ayn Rand Institute, and I teach Ayn Rand's ideas and talk about her philosophy. So that it shaped the whole course of my life.
Yeah, I had read a little bit of Ayn Rand prior to The Fountainhead. I think I read her nonfiction essay, Philosophy Who Needs It, first. And then because I knew a little bit about her, I knew about this essay contest, and I thought I'll read the Fountainhead for the essay contest. And I read that when I was about 17. I read that my senior year in high school. Ashwin is asking, were her characters intended to be completely original, or were they inspired by real life people, or perhaps something in between? I think that perhaps something in between is probably the right way to think about it. So there Ayn Rand described her literary philosophy as romantic realism. And what that meant for her was that, the romanticism part is related to what I was discussing earlier about how she sees especially literary art as for the sake of projecting a moral ideal. And so in that regard, she is idealizing. That is, she's taking things that she sees in real life, but she's polishing them up. She's essentializing them. She's streamlining them in order to portray the essence of ideas as embodied in individuals. But it's still romantic realism. So she doesn't want to portray a fantasy world. She doesn't want to portray something in the long distant past or the hypothetical future. It's The Fountainhead is one of her most realistic novels. And to know something about the subject matter, she actually did a lot of research. She worked in an architecture firm as a secretary. I can't remember for how long, but it was at least the better part of a year to acquaint herself with the profession and the way architects work. And in the course of doing her research on architecture, one of the architects that she came to admire was Frank Lloyd Wright. Now, a lot of people often ask, was Wright inspired, or was the character of Howard Rourke inspired by Wright? And it's certainly the case that there are aspects of Rourke's story that are reminiscent of aspects of the biography of Wright. But I don't think she would have said that Rourke was inspired by Wright. Rourke was inspired by her own thinking about life, and in certain ways, by her own life story. Well, one of the things we'll be talking about as we go through the story is ways in which Rourke ends up facing decisions similar to hers. So there are certainly elements of people like Frank Lloyd Wright, people like Lewis Sullivan, another architect, people like William Randolph Hearst, perhaps, who's a journal, a newspaper magnate, others like that. There's a socialist politician from England named Harold Laski, who she may have observed things about in formulating aspects of one of her antagonistic characters. So yeah, elements that she observed, but she took these elements that she observed and she grafted them together in order to portray the ideals that she herself independently wanted to portray. She had the idea for the novel well before she had even started, I think, studying architecture. And so it was architecture that she chose as a field because she thought it would be a convenient one in which to illustrate the kinds of dramatic conflicts that would help illustrate these ideas. Anything you want to add to that, Keith?
No, I think that covers it.
Okay, what else do we have here?
Terrence
actually says, didn't Ayn Rand work with a woman in Hollywood that wanted things because others wanted them and that influenced a character in this book? That's the kind of thing I was talking about just a minute ago, Terrence. Yes, that's true. There was a woman she worked with who said, if other people have a car, I want two cars. If other people have a house, I want two houses, something like that. And when she heard this coworker say this, she was shocked that there are people out there who set their standards according to what other people want, and then only for the sake of outdoing and impressing them, because she herself didn't think that she thought about life that way. And so if anything, that was the seed of the idea. And that's well before she was doing any kind of research in architecture.
Yeah, but I would. So part of what's important there is what she's doing is she's observing people in the world making comments like that. Observe someone like Frank Lloyd Wright designing buildings the way he designed. But what she's doing is she's drawing philosophical abstractions from that. Did you already say that? And then embodying
Not quite in that language, so, but so, yeah. So
part of her literary method is she's trying to identify the principles governing what she's seeing, and then creating sort of from scratch characters that embody those principles. So they're not representations of people in the real world. They're meant to concretize and embody the philosophical abstractions that she identified. So the characters are wholly original in that respect. So Judith is asking, are there various degrees of individualism as there are with collectivism? Some of the characters have specific errors in their thinking, you know, that they may or may not correct during the novel. I mean, what I would say is that there are characters who embody certain elements of individualism, but stray from individualism in other respects. So, you know, it's not that they represent a variation on individualism. I mean, the way one way to think of it is, you know, there's lots of ways that you can go wrong in life, but there's only one way in a fundamental sense to go right. And so it's like that with individualism and collectivism. There are lots of different variations on second-handedness and collectivism and those ideas. But to be an individualist in a fundamental sense has certain philosophic requirements and implications, which will come out over the course of discussing the book.
I don't have anything to add there. By the way, Nick
is
saying...
We have just a few minutes left here, I guess.
Yeah, Nick is saying he can hear discussions off mic. It's confusing. I'm not quite sure what you mean, Nick. I don't hear any other discussions happening. Maybe you could tell us what you mean by that. I wonder if anyone else is noticing something like that as well. Eric asks, is your 100-page reading schedule based on chapters? Basically, yes. So if you go to that webpage that I showed earlier, you'll see that it's divided up. There's basically 4 to 5 chapters per session. For one session, I think it's more than that because they're shorter chapters. But they are divided into chapters, so there won't be any arbitrary break-off.
Chapter numbers in the reading, because maybe we should give the chapter numbers for people who have a different copy of the book.
The chapter numbers are there on the schedule. And actually, let me just go ahead and, since we're about to stop anyway, share with you what we're talking about next week. So next week, Friday, April 3rd, we'll be looking at part 1, chapters 1 through 8, which is pages 15 through 102. In the mass market edition, Eric, you were worried because you were wondering if your edition was going to correspond. And there are a lot of different editions out there with different paginations. So we're using this one to decide our pagination. But as long as you know the chapter numbers, you'll be fine.
Yeah, and that has the same pagination as the currently available mass market one.
Yes.
My copy is like completely falling apart here.
Grant asks if we have any nonfiction reading that you would recommend pairing with these sessions, particular essays that will be relevant to the discussions. I mean, we could do that, Grant, but I think it's it's not going to be our primary focus. We're mainly just going to be digging straight into the novels themselves, into the novel itself here. And certainly if there are people, if you're having discussions with people online on the Facebook page for the Fountainhead where we're posting these broadcasts, if you want to post nonfiction essays that you think would be useful for people to look at in connection with the events of the novel that we're discussing, that's fine. Though I would really encourage people to focus first on the fiction and then maybe look at the nonfiction later. Aditya asks if this is going to be a spoiler-free discussion. Absolutely, yes. That is our intention. And I think you're asking because you've read this book before and you know what happens. And so one thing that I'm going to encourage everybody who's a veteran reader who's participating, I'm going to encourage you strongly not to post any kinds of spoilers in any of the places where this is being discussed, because some of these people who are with us are reading this for the first time. And I think we can all remember how wonderful it is to read a book like this for the first time, and spoilers spoil it. So each of our discussions is going to be confined only to the reading that's been assigned, not in any way looking forward to what happens later. And Keith, is that a good time to stop, do you think?
Yeah.
Okay, Terrence, you asked a question, but I think if we answered that, we'd probably be giving away too much.
Terrence, your question was the one that we, earlier in the session, we thought, should we talk about this? And we thought, no, it'll be a spoiler. So that'll come up in later sessions. So.
But thanks for asking.
Yeah.
All right. So see you all next week, same time, Friday, April 3rd, for part one, chapters 1 through 8. I haven't reread this yet myself. I'm going to be doing it over the weekend, and I'm looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to having discussions with all of you about this wonderful novel.
Yeah, thank you all for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you again next week. And even more of you, bring your friends.
Yes, bring your friends. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Ayn Rand Institute Live podcast. For more content like this, subscribe to our other podcasts, Philosophy for Living on Earth, and New Ideal from the Ayn Rand Institute. If you like what you hear, leave us a review and recommend it to a friend. This podcast is made possible by donors to the Ayn Rand Institute. Help support this podcast by becoming an ARI member. Go to aynrand.org/membership to learn more.